When I was on the European Lego Justice Tour, you know, you were doing that thing with the kids after the shows, you know, backstage with the tables and signing stuff. Were you able to do that in America when you were doing the arenas and all?
Mm-hmm. We'd go outside and sign stuff for them. There's a couple times it got a little out of hand, but we always still did that, and I just hope we still can. I really do, man. I mean, that.
Have you talked about trying to do it, or how you're gonna do it?
No, it hasn't been discussed. I mean, but if it comes up, of course we're gonna try to tackle it. You know, we're not ones to bow to a challenge, that kind of a thing, and it probably will become a challenge.
It's gonna be
really, really a bitch. If kids, I don't know. We usually hang around for quite a while after the gigs, and then if there's still, sometimes even at the last gig, you know, the last gigs in America, there was still a couple or a few hundred kids have waited 3 hours after we're done playing, and they're still waiting. And that takes some time to take care of that and say hi to everybody and all that. But I really feel that if we lose that, I'm not going to feel right about the whole thing. I really am not. I'm going to feel very, very uncomfortable about the whole thing if we turn our backs on that stuff. I think it'll be the death of us if we do, actually.
Because really, those were the ones that were sort of like keeping it going all through the lean years, and like what you've got now is
right.
Like all the peripheral people.
Yeah.
Well, there's ones that have sort of like made it number one.
There's so many new people that are being turned on Metallica now, we can't even imagine it, you know? I mean, the things that have just happened in the last 6 weeks, MTV Awards and the album taken off and being played on radio, where it was never, ever played on radio before.
Yeah,
and,
on the radio.
You know, like your Natalie Cole and any of those bands that have three letters for a name, OMD, EMF, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Metallica back to back, you just, wow. It's kind of strange. And there's always the question about, you know, the kids that are turned off now because we're not playing Kill 'Em All Again 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I gotta get 220 beats every song and stuff. And that kind of, I don't know, it kind of bums me out because I would like to think that if they were our real fans from the beginning, that they would have grown with us.
Yeah.
Instead of shunning us now. No.
Have you run into many of those persons?
Not many, but there are the few, and I'm sure there's a lot more that we don't see.
Yeah. When they say that, how do you respond to them? Like, have you actually had
dialogues
with these people?
Mostly from interviewers like a fanzine that are speaking for the kids of that, you know, that think like that. I always go back and refer to the live thing, since that's what I know about. We can play Whiplash, Fight Fire, anything as fast as anybody ever, and then play Nothing Else Matters with the same effectiveness and the same weight. You know, and that's how I respond. I mean, Metallica doesn't have to prove anything to anyone as far as playing fast. So if they feel that we've let them down because we're not playing Kill 'Em All Again, then I think that's kind of short, close-minded on their part.
They're not really paying attention.
They should have, right? They should have. If they're our friends, then they should be with us all the way, and they should grow with our growth.
Justice Tour, I guess, had your time off or whatever, and came back, did you actually sort of sit down and sort of say, well, this is what we should do, this is what we want to do? Was there actually sort of like a powwow thing, or was it?
No.
Was it?
It's kind of a happening. It's kind of a grad, you know, it's kind of a thing that happened. It was the same process, the same process as always.
It seems like the sort of thing that you would actually talk about, as opposed to just sort of like, oh, well, it was a
random. You know, I think that, well, James and Lars might tell you different, because, I mean, they were with, you know, they were the nucleus the whole time, like they always have been. The process was the same as far as I know, as far as everybody making their tapes at home and putting everything together and pick the best stuff. That's how it was again. But the way that we went about the simplicity of everything this time, just keeping everything to, you know, like one or two riffs and just go it, right? And build something really strong and heavy about around that, instead of having a bunch of parts in one song, just making everybody all confused and shit. It was that kind of carried over, and that's the way that James was writing. And so that's kind of how the way the band went, because, you know, that's just the way it is. James is the changes what's happening, you know. So. And we all just kind of added our little things as we went. And I mean, the way that I had to approach the bass this time, and the way that Lars approached his drums, and you know, the musical thing was really much more focused, I think, than it's ever been before. We really, really had an idea, whether we sat down and discussed it and said, we're going to do this, going to do that, and like drew the lines. I don't think that was there. I think that it was kind of unspoken law that we knew what we had to achieve. It was quite a bit of time and quite a lot of experiences in between album to album in those 3 years. You know, played a lot of shows and learned a lot of things and listened to a lot of different music and brought on different influences and stuff like that. All those are factors, you know.
Because the thing is, you really got away from the thing that you sort of created, that the band sort of created, which was that speed metal.
I don't know.
Thrash, whatever it is, but it's, you know, it seems like in a way you sort of like distance yourself just from that one sort of rut.
Okay. Yeah. I guess we have distanced ourselves a little bit, but I don't think we've changed as how we think and what we really are. I don't think that's, you know, we've still, the core is still what Metallica has always been. It's just that we've kind of shown that we can, when we take chances like this and play some pretty nylon string song and James is actually singing and stuff like that, that we can do it, you know, and we're not afraid to show that we can do it, and maybe not afraid to show a little vulnerability here and there, and that we, you know, not just all the time, you know, that we have, that there's more to us than that.
Well, see, as compared to vulnerability is an interesting phrase, because our word, because is the least word that anyone would least associate with a band like,
right,
Metallica.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying, you know, it's like we just kind of, yeah, right, kind of showed another side and showed that we're not so wimpy or weak that we're afraid of showing that. We still, you know, we know our strength, right? I mean, some of the things that Nothing Else Matters or The Unforgiven, when James gets down and actually, you know, and sings real nice, and he's kind of go, ooh, you know, and it's like nobody would ever expect that. All these people are talking before the album come out, or all of, you know, oh, what are they gonna do? Oh, they sold out. Oh, they're gonna wimp out. Oh, right? They had, fucking nobody had any idea. Nobody could predict, you know? And then when the shit comes out, they just go, jeez. Uh-huh. They couldn't predict what we were doing. I don't like to think that we've changed the core. That's really what my point I'm trying to make. We don't. I think that you'll probably see that when the live thing comes down, that when we, you know, we still got... That's our strength, you know, and that's...
I haven't seen you in 2 years,
right.
So I'm looking forward to Saturday.
It's still there, and if anything, we've become stronger in that vein. I think there is much more confidence as far as the unit thing. Everybody, like, this guy trusts these three guys, and so on. You know, I mean, everybody knows. It's really become... we've only played, what, 16, 17 shows since we got back out of twiddling knobs for 9 months, you know, as we were kind of shaking off the rust to begin with. But now that it's come around, I mean, I have a lot of confidence that we're definitely gonna be able to live up to what everybody's expecting of us. Definitely.
Do you have any idea how much it cost to make the record? 9 months in the studio is a long time.
Yeah, I know. How much should I tell you?
Of course, that's why I asked.
Oh, it was over a mil too, I think.
Do you think that's sort of like a justified amount for a record?
I tell you,
I know it's sort of it's kind of apples and oranges, but
it is. But
you know, people sort you of listen think to, 9 months.
Listen to dollars. You listen to any one of the 12 songs on that record, or listen to three of them,
yeah.
And it's like the sound is so big and so right. You know, I think that it was worth it. I mean, we took Bob Rock for one thing. I don't know if we're going to talk about that now. He brought out things that, you know, Metallica, we were kind of scared to ever do, or that we didn't even know that we had in us. He was, I mean, he took time with, I don't know if I talked to you about this before a little bit, but when we sat down and went through X number of guitars, an X number of amp combinations, configurations, every fucking possible equipment thing that anybody has to offer to find the sound that was right. Whether that took a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever to find that sound and then went with it, you know? We knew what we wanted to sound like. He was able to bring it to reality. He knew what to do here, what effects to use there, all that stuff. He had this vision that when he was in the rehearsal with us, September of 90, and he knew what the shit was gonna sound like right now. You know? With this raw crap and James singing like, oh, like his voice has been fucked for years, and you know, everybody's kind of still trying to like figure out their parts, and oh, I used to play this instrument, you know, and stuff like that. And he knew what it was gonna sound like when it came out. That was just amazing for the way that he put us at ease to really capture the performance thing. Really. Especially with James, and I think it's very obvious. I mean, he made me feel real good. I can speak personally, and I think it comes out on the record. It was actually based on a Metallica record, finally. And, you know, that's, I mean, that speaks for itself. But James, also the vocal thing, he was never that loose, and he was afraid to show what he was capable of. I'm repeating myself, but it's just
about the sort of
see, James, he impressed James with his know-how, you know, and his like just his ability and his vision and his like, he just made him loose enough to kind of, you know, just scat a little bit and yeah, and just kind of do whatever, feel real loose, and Bob just said, get it out, man, do whatever the fuck you want, and if we're not gonna, who cares, man, let's fucking do it, you know. And all he would ever do before is like vocal, double vocal, 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 and the same thing, just like, you know, just kind of mimeo the descent over and over again. And this time, he let soul out, you know, fucking soul and emotion and shit, you know?
James is such a complex guy anyway, but there's a funny thing about him, not that I know him that well, but just from, you know, the time I've spent in doing this sort of thing, is that there's a part of him that's very strong-willed, very, you know, go for it, very intense, and yet there seems this other thing that's kind of like, that sort of holds things back, like, you know, there's only this one, like, public thing or the visual thing that he lets out is the very forceful,
the
very
lion.
Intense, the, yeah, the lion. And yet there is this other thing which is just as strong, but it's not as sort of aggressive or combative. Or,
I know what you mean. Scary. Or yeah, like, or,
you know, there's something.
Yeah, people are intimidating even. People are very intimidated by him a lot of times, you know.
When I first met him, I was extremely intimidated. Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't know where was coming from, right. Sort of like, that's almost like a protective device.
It is, it definitely is, and there's, yeah, that's what I was just going to say, it's not like he'd tell you, you know, or it's not like that he'd show it. I mean, it's one of those people, you know, there's a few people that got this gift that whatever they do, it's like, shit.
Yeah.
It's like, and then he's just one of them. And then, you know, he could pick up any instrument and just go from whatever. So it's.
But when you first sort of got in, you know, how did you relate to James? Did you feel comfortable with him initially, or because Lars seems to be the real open?
Yeah, it was really. I tell you, man, it was really. Now that I look back, it was really weird for the first two, maybe even 3 years, because. No, it was the situation that brought it all together to begin with was fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, just not right, you know? It's really wrong, really just not right. And it was very hard for these guys, and as far as anyone in the family, you know, crew and that is concerned, but especially the guys in the band, to open up to someone else, you know, to really take someone as a friend and trust and respect and things like, because Cliff really meant so much to them, and then being taken away like that, and they just shut up, man. They just fucking closed up, and they didn't want. They were scared for different reasons, like to open up somebody else for him to be taken away again,
yeah.
Or to open up somebody else and then be,
assume that will take the position,
right? Or if expectations are not met, you know, and scared of that. And it was just really weird for the first bit, and so I tried to talk to him and to, you know, maybe impress him with different things, you know, or do my best to, you know, just be the part. But after a while, I realized that just you be you and be proud of what you are and don't try to be somebody else. And that's, I mean, these guys have all taught me that, and just the whole thing of being in this organization has taught me that. And now everybody sees it, and I'm not sure if they're real happy about that or whatever, but I am myself now. And I think they respect it in certain ways when I don't, you know, when I just happen to be maybe the quiet guy in the corner and not really, no, I don't really feel like going out and raging tonight or, you know, go out and get fucked up or whatever. It's just kind of, maybe I'll just hang out and listen to some blues tunes and just, you know, kind of hang or whatever, you know. That's, and now they respect me for that, that me and not just being a yes man, you know. Just, oh, go out and drink, can I, does that mean I'm cool? You know, or whatever. Because well, that's how it was for the first bit.
Well, what was it like with James, with that sort of yin-yang aspect of his personality, which is sort of like, again, sort of the intimidating, aggressive thing, not really showing these other aspects? How did you sort of cope with that initially? Because even
nobody,
Mars, in his own way, is sort of more open.
It was hard to get close to him, no matter what, no matter who you were.
Yeah.
Only over the past, I think, 2 years, maybe 18 months, he's started to break out of that shell and not afraid to show his real self also. He still is the intimidating person that he is. I mean, that is him. That is his real, and he's not afraid, you know, to whatever. But he also has just shown more strength in that he's not afraid to, you know, maybe do something that, oh, that might be wimpy, you know, but if it's actually him, he's not kind of afraid to show those little things and start to open up a lot more and maybe, you know, I guess.